Shalom, welcome to the Jewish Task Force, JTF. My name is Chaim Ben Pesach. This program is dedicated to a refuah shlema, complete recovery, for Sharon Katz, Malka Bat Allegra, Shifra Bat Sara, Shlomo Ben Sara, and Dorit Bat Sara, and to Ilui Neshamot, to elevating the souls of Betzalel Ben Mordechai, Daniel Nankin, Allegra Bat Rachel, Lunita Adler, Helen Friedman, Harab Binyamin Kahana, Pesach Seb Ben Chava, Harab Meir Kahana, Yosef Ben Meir, Bari Hoffman, Dennis Shor, Ruven Hoffman, Robert Mitman, and Sipora Fegi Bat Liba. We're going to be discussing a part of a book in the Bible. The book is called Sefer Shoftim, which means the Book of Judges. And in Sefer Shoftim, there is the story of Shimshon HaGibor, Samson the hero. Now, many of you may be familiar with a movie series that came out in the 1980s called Rambo, where basically one guy, I never saw the series, but my understanding is that one guy by himself, Sylvester Stallone, I think it was Sylvester Stallone was the actor, I don't even pay attention, I couldn't care less, but basically Hollywood created a situation where one guy goes to war and wins the war by himself, defeats a whole country and wins the war basically by himself. And that seems pretty ridiculous to us, but there is actually a real life story like this, and we're going to be discussing it, and that's the story of Shimshon, the story of Samson. And it's a story, again, in the Bible. And what exactly does it say? What exactly is this fascinating story about? First of all, Sefer Shoftim, the Book of Judges, is a book which shows that before kings were anointed, before you had Shaul, the first king of Israel, and then David, the second king of Israel, and Shlomo, the third king, before we had kings over Israel, you had what was called judges, a period of judges, where for over 400 years, the Jews didn't have a king. They didn't have a single leader ruling over them. And the reason for this was because of the 12 tribes not being able to agree on a single leader. And if one of the tribes had tried to impose a king, it probably would have caused civil war, and there could have been all types of problems, and the king might have been killed. So for over 400 years, the Jews didn't have a king and didn't have a real stable leadership in the land of Israel for over four centuries. That's a very long time to live like that in a tribal situation, particularly when you're facing so many hostile people around you. So the book of Judges, Sefer Shoftim in Hebrew, the Book of Judges, is a book that explains to us what happened during that period of over four centuries when the Jews were living in the land of Israel like that, without a king and without a stable leadership and without a united single central government. What did that lead to? And the disasters that it led to, because it was disastrous. One of the judges toward the end, one of the judges at the end of the story, of all of these judges, they had one judge after another, and at the end they had a judge named Shimshon HaGibor, Samson the hero. And they didn't even know that he was their judge. They didn't even know, and we're going to explain why. First of all, the name Shimshon, the name Samson, in Hebrew, Shimshon. Shemesh is sun in Hebrew, the sun. Shimshon is like a little sun. And why was his name, in effect, the little sun? Because he brought some light to the people of Israel and to the world during the 20 years that he was a judge in Israel. He did bring some light. But it was only a little light. It was not the big light that we would eventually have from David HaMelech, from King David, and from other great leaders of Israel. And even though Shimshon was a great leader of Israel, but he didn't bring the great light that a king would bring for reasons that we're going to explain. And probably the main reason is because he made serious moral mistakes. He committed serious sins and made moral mistakes that led to a sinful life and that led to having Hashem, God, take his protection away from him. But first, let's understand the situation we were in over here. HaPlishtim, the Philistines, were ruling over the people, the tribe of Yehuda, and Shimshon, his father, was from the was from Shevet Dan, from the tribe Dan, and his mother was from the tribe Yehuda. And the Philistines were ruling over the Jews at that time, persecuting them, humiliating them, ruling over their land, not giving them freedom, not giving them sovereignty. And so it was a very bad situation for the Jewish people. And Shimshon wanted to liberate the Jews and help the Jews. But there was a problem. The Philistines, HaPlishtim, were stronger than the Jews militarily. They had far more soldiers, they had far better equipment to wage war, chariots and all types of things that the Jews didn't have. They didn't allow the Jews. For hundreds of years, the Jews were not allowed even to own swords, were not allowed to own anything, basically. When they did wage war, when they did rebel, it was usually with their plowshares and their farming tools. They used those as weapons to rebel. And that's certainly not as effective as the very effective weaponry that was used against them by their oppressors. So the Jews were at a tremendous disadvantage in every respect. And in addition to that, the Jews were completely disunited and disorganized with no stable leadership. So Shimshon, Samson, again, Shimshon is Samson in Hebrew. Shimshon understood that if he attacked the Philistines, and if he committed guerrilla acts, even guerrilla attacks against the Philistines, that they would retaliate against the Jews and it would be catastrophic for the Jews, that many, many Jews could be murdered. Hundreds of thousands of Jews, God forbid, could be murdered. So he understood that because of the weak position of the Jews, and there was a weak Jewish mentality as well, the Jews began to develop a mentality of, we can't defeat the Philistines, they're our masters. So the Jews had a defeatist mentality, and they didn't have weaponry, and they hadn't been trained for war for a long time, and hadn't waged war for a long time, and they were completely disorganized and not united, and just it was a catastrophe. So Shimshon had to develop a strategy where he would strike at the Philistines without the Philistines blaming the Jews for it, without the Philistines going and then retaliating and getting revenge against the Jews and murdering huge numbers of Jews. So here's what he did. He used personal excuses to attack the Philistines. He created a situation where the Philistines thought that he was going after them for personal reasons, because he had personal grievances against them that had nothing to do with the Jews, and that the Jews didn't even approve of what he was doing. It was just because of his personal grievances. So the Philistines, in the end, only came after him. They didn't come after the Jews, because the Jews had nothing to do with it, supposedly, even though Shimshon's real motivation was a nationalistic motivation, was a motivation to help his people. The first thing that Shimshon did was he decided he wanted to marry a Philistine woman. And so he announces to his parents he wants to marry a Philistine woman. He did convert her. Harambam and other commentators tell, it's not written in the Bible, but the commentators tell us that, of course, they went through a process of giur is conversion. He wouldn't marry a woman without converting her. But still, it wasn't a sincere conversion. She was still loyal to her own people, and he basically just wanted an excuse. He wanted to be able to marry her and have an excuse so that there'd be a conflict that would be created, a personal conflict, so he would be able to do things against the Philistines, and the Philistines would say, well, this is just his personal grievance that has nothing to do with the Jews, so we're not going to do anything to the Jews, we're just going to go after him. So here's what happened. He marries a Philistine woman and converts her, and then has a 14-day marriage celebration. It's like Sheva Brachot. In Judaism, you have Sheva Brachot, where you just have the 7 days where we say Brachot, where we say blessings to the new married couple. Beautiful, really beautiful ceremony that you have, a real beautiful example of how Judaism celebrates marriage and celebrates the family. It's a magnificent Jewish custom and tradition. But anyway, in Shimshon's case, he decided to have a 14-day celebration. And he invited all of these Philistine, he invited 30 Philistine youth to come to the celebration. He had a reason for doing that. First of all, she was a Philistine, his wife was a Philistine who had converted, quote-unquote. And so he invites 13 Philistine youth over. And then as part of the tradition that they had in those days, sometimes at these events, they would have what they call a chidon. A chidon is like a quiz. Or it's a quiz or a riddle they would have like a riddle, and then they'd make a bet. They would make a wager on the riddle. If you can solve the riddle, you'll win, and if you can't solve it, I win. So he gave them a riddle, and he said, if you win, I will give you 30 very fancy suits and a very expensive clothing of those days, and 30 sheets that were very expensive, if you win, for the 30 Philistine youth. And these 30 and if you win, and that's if you win, you will get the, I will give you 30 of these sheets and very expensive jackets for you to have. And if I win, you're going to have to give me 30 expensive jackets and 30 very expensive sheets. So they said, okay, go ahead, tell us what the riddle is. So he told them a riddle. They didn't know how to solve it. They didn't know what to do. So they finally went and pressured Shimshon's wife to tell them what the riddle answer was. She didn't know. Shimshon didn't tell her. But she went to Shimshon and she begged him, please tell me, let me know what it is. And he told her. He revealed it to her. And it was really part of the plan. He knew what was going to happen. He revealed it to her. Then the 30 Philistine youth went to her and said, if you don't tell us, we're going to burn down your house, kill you and your whole family and burn down your house. We want to know what the answer is to that riddle. So she told them. She revealed it. And they told him, and so they won. They won the riddle. So he owed them 30 sheets and 30 very expensive pieces of clothing. So Shimshon decided, okay, you won, but you won by cheating. You won by threatening my wife and cheating. And so he said, I'll get you your sheets and your very expensive clothing. He went among the Philistines, among other Philistines, killed 30 Philistines, took their very expensive clothing and sheets, after killing 30 of them, and then brought them and said, Here, you won the riddle, okay, here it is, here's your prize. Meanwhile, he killed 30 of the enemy. Okay, and remember, by the way, the Philistines were a very cruel and evil and sadistic enemy that Shimshon wanted an excuse to go after them and strike them. So he had his excuse. He went and did this because he said, you threaten me, I'm going to go after your people and I'll get the sheets and I'll get the very expensive clothing, but I'm not going to pay for it. Your people are going to pay for it because of what you did. And so he killed 30. He killed 30 of them and then went and gave the 30 youth that were at his wedding ceremony. He gave them the sheets and the clothing because he said, you did guess the riddle after threatening my wife. That was just the beginning of the attacks the guerrilla attacks that he was going to make on the Philistines. Shimshon waged a guerrilla war by himself, single-handedly against the Philistines. And upended the whole Philistine situation, the whole Philistine rule, and created a catastrophe for them all by himself. It was amazing. Shimshon had incredible strength, physical strength. And his physical strength came from the fact that he was a Nazir from birth. An angel came to his mother and said to his mother, you're going to have your son and he's going to liberate the Jewish people and so on, but he has to be a Nazir. A Nazir means someone who abstains from drinking wine, from cutting his hair, from shaving. He has to abstain from all of these things. So he had to abstain from cutting his hair and from drinking wine or from going near wine or wine products. And so that's what the Nezirut was in those days. That was the abstention, the system of abstention that people would have when they made a vow. But usually someone would make a vow to do this and then would be a Nazir for a year or for 30 days or whatever, depending on the vow that he made to Hashem. Shimshon was born a Nazir. He was, from birth, he was ordered to be a Nazir. And the Malach, the angel of God, warned his mother and his father that he had to remain a Nazir. He had to remain abstinent for the rest of his life. And that was the source of his strength. That was the source of his miraculous physical strength. Now, the Philistines, after he went and killed these 30 Philistine youth in order to pay the other 30 Philistine youth the prizes for the riddle that they guessed after threatening his wife, what the Philistines decided to do is they took his wife away from him. The Philistines and her father took his wife away and gave her to another Philistine. other words, they just took his wife away. This is after he's married. They take his wife away and give her to another man. Another Philistine. This was another Philistine man. This was it. Because they had no... The Philistines were completely immoral. There was no real there was no loyalty in marriage. There was no loyalty. Nobody was loyal to anybody. Everybody stabs everybody in the back. That was Philistine culture. So Shimshon had an excuse now to get revenge again. And he did. He burned their agricultural land. He killed dozens of them, then hundreds, then thousands. I mean, literally killed thousands of them eventually. At one point, he took the jaw of an ass, of a jackass, and used it as a weapon. The jaw of a jackass can actually be very strong, sturdy, and sharp. And one by one, he killed 1,000 Philistines. And so he was really creating havoc. He was burning their land, destroying their crops, killing their youth and the people that made up their military, really devastating their society. So the Philistines decide they're going to go over to Shevet Yehuda, the tribe of Judah, which was the largest of the 12 tribes. They're going to go to Shevet Yehuda, and they're going to say, you have to hand us over. We want you to hand us over. And they had a whole army waiting. Then they said, if you don't, we're going to destroy you. We're going to attack you and destroy you and kill all of you. So instead of fighting back and instead of resisting the way Shimshon was doing, because they had a defeatist mentality, they said, okay, we'll hand him over. But and they insisted. They said, we had nothing to do with all this. We don't know why he's doing this. This is terrible. We're against all of this. That's what they told the leaders of the tribe of Judah. That's what they told the Philistines. So they go to Shimshon, and 3,000 of them go to Shimshon. 3,000, they needed 3,000 Judean soldiers and men to go to Shimshon and say to him, we want to hand you over to the Philistines, because what you have done, the Plishtim, the Philistines, HaPlishtim, are really, they're threatening to destroy us now because of you. You've created tremendous problems and tension for us because of this. Why are you doing this? And Shimshon said, I'm only doing unto them what they do unto me. That's what he said. In other words, he continued to use the excuse, the personal excuses and the personal grievances as the reason. So he was giving them an out. He was giving them an out with the Philistines, and they really believed, and the Jews also really believed that this was just a personal thing that he had, when in reality, these were excuses he was using in order to help his people and liberate his people. So they tied him up, the Jews tied him. He said to the Jews, okay, I will let you hand me over to the Plishtim. I will let you hand me over to them. But I don't want you harming me or doing anything to me, because he didn't want to have to defend himself and hurt his fellow Jews. So he said, as long as you don't do anything to me, you can hand me over. So they did. They tied him up and they handed him over to the Plishtim to save themselves from extermination. And he, of course, frees himself. And I'm saying, of course, he freed himself from after they had tied him up very securely from something that no normal human being could get out of. He, with his tremendous strength, frees himself from the bonds that they had created around his hands and his feet, and then again starts slaughtering Philistines. After this incident, the Philistines know they have a serious problem. They just can't get rid of him. And so Shimshon decides he needs more excuses to go and create more problems for the Philistines, create more problems for the Plishtim, because what he was doing was, while he was doing this, killing them, burning their land, destroying their economy, creating havoc in their society, creating fear, creating a culture of fear among them, while he was doing this, they left the Jews alone because they were so busy taking care, licking their wounds and taking care of all of the terrible problems that Shimshon was creating for them. The Plishtim didn't have time to persecute, murder, rape Jewish women and murder Jews and steal and rob and do all the other terrible things they were doing from the Jewish people for so long. They didn't have time to do this anymore. So the Jews actually had a period of relief. They had years where they weren't being oppressed by the Philistines, because the Philistines were so busy trying to cope with the attacks from this guerrilla warrior Shimshon, all attacks, all of which they were convinced were the result of personal grievances of Shimshon, so they couldn't really go after the Jews because it wouldn't help any. That's what they felt. And so Shimshon decides to go back to the Philistine territory and decides to start going with Philistine prostitutes. Now, his original intent when he went with Philistine women and prostitutes and all the things he did with them, his original intent was to save the Jewish people. But eventually, this is the danger you face when you do things that are against the Torah in order to achieve a noble goal. The problem was that he wound up actually falling into a world of sin. The prostitutes and the women he went with, they actually created a situation where he became very attracted to them, and ended up falling in love with at least one of them, which we're going to speak about in a moment. But this is the danger you face. Ein apotropus la'arayot, we're taught by the rabbis, which means there's no guarantor against committing sexual sins. You don't want to put yourself in the way of sexual temptation ever. You don't want to say, I'm strong enough. It doesn't bother me. You don't want to ever put yourself in that situation. Because the danger of falling into sexual temptation and sexual sin, which is what Shimshon ended up doing, is something that can bring that can bring someone's downfall. Now, Shimshon ends up marrying Delilah. Delilah, Delilah in English, Delilah in Hebrew. Delilah marries him. Again, a phony conversion and so on, and they get married. But Shimshon really loves her, really falls in love with her, and is very attracted to her. This eventually becomes his downfall. This was a terrible sin. To fall in love with the enemy, and to trust the enemy, and to trust people who are trying to destroy your people, to be willing to do that, that was his real terrible sin. That was his unforgivable sin that he ended up paying for with his life. That Hashem does not tolerate. Hashem will not tolerate people who fall in love with enemies of the Jews, who fall in love with enemies of their people, and who end up trusting and loving their enemies. Hashem does not tolerate that. He detests that type of behavior because it's disloyal, it's evil, and it's something that Hashem does not want. And so that's something that should always, always be avoided, and even the slightest danger of doing that should be avoided at all costs. That's the worst thing that could happen. Never, never have any pity or mercy on the cruel beasts that want to destroy the Jewish people, on your enemies. Never have any mercy on them. There's a war. When they wage war to destroy your people, you have to wage war to destroy them. That's the message of the Bible consistently, and many kings fell because of that, and the Jewish people ended up falling because of that. Terrible thing, terrible tragedies happened. And Shimshon is an example of that, where we learn what a terrible sin it is to trust your enemies and to fall in love with your enemies, and so the terrible sin. First of all, Jews are not allowed to marry or fall in love with or have sexual relations with non-Jewish women at all. Okay, because the Jews and the non-Jews, on a marriage level and sexual level, are separated. That's a separation that's in the Bible. It's part of the commandments of the Bible, clearly written in the Torah. The Jews have to marry their fellow Jews. Intermarriage is absolutely forbidden in Judaism. This is the Jews are a special people, a chosen people, and they have a special destiny in the world. And if they intermarry and assimilate, it'll cause the disappearance of the Jewish people, and it'll also cause the Jews to worship other gods and follow other customs and cultures, God forbid, which is a catastrophe for the Jewish people. So this is absolutely forbidden for a Jew to go even with a nice non-Jewish woman, with a righteous non-Jewish woman. And so for him to go with an enemy of his people and trust her, and he trusted her and he loved her and he was very attracted to her, very serious sin, and he was a really righteous, magnificent Jew, but he fell because of this. And so she finally, the Philistine leaders come to Delilah. They're married. The Dlilan and Shimshona together. And the Philistine leaders come to Shimshon. I don't even know if it was formally or officially a marriage or what it was, but they're living together. I don't know if it really was a formal official marriage, but they're living together. And they're sleeping with each other. And they come to Dlilah and they say, okay, we will give you a very large, we'll give you 1,100 talents of gold. But we want to know what the secret is of Shimshon's strength. How does he get such incredible strength that he could do these terrible things to us and we can't touch him? Every time we try to do something to him to get him, we wind up having large numbers of our people killed and he goes unharmed. What is the source? What is the secret of his strength? And we will all pay you a very large amount of money, 1,100 talents, if you give us the secret, if you find out the secret and reveal to us the secret. So she says, okay, I'm going to try to find out. So she goes to him and begs him to tell her. And he tells her that if wet new ropes are tied around him, that he's helpless if that happens. So she tries it. She says, okay, well, let's try it. Let's see if that really works. So he goes to sleep and she ties around wet ropes around him, and he knows that a test is taking place here. He didn't know that she was doing it on behalf of the Philistines who wanted to kill him. He thought it was just out of her own curiosity. But anyway, he trusted her and believed her and fell in love with her. But she ties the wet ropes around him, and he easily breaks out of the wet ropes. Easily. It didn't work. Then she says, you made a fool out of me. You were laughing at me. You claim you love me. You don't really love me. And, you know what women say to men. You don't really love me. You don't really love me. And so on. And starts crying and so on. So Shimshon tells her, okay, it's not that. And gives her a second version. of what would weaken him and make him vulnerable and make him take away his incredible miraculous strength, and stronger ropes and stronger, and he gives her new ways to tie him up. But he breaks out of that the second time. In other words, he didn't reveal it to her. And the third time, again, he does the same thing, but the third time there's a hint. He says, tie my hair up in knots and tie... In other words, he hinted that it was his hair that was the key here. So the third time, he's already getting closer to telling her the truth. But still, he didn't tell her the truth. And so what she would do is each time she would tie him up, do what he said was necessary in order to make him weak, and then would scream, "The Philistines are upon you, Shimshon!" And he would wake up and break out and get ready to kill them. And he did that three times with her, three different things that he told her would weaken him. And so she finally, the fourth time, she was crying and upset and said, "You don't love me, and this is all you do is mock me and ridicule me." And so he finally gave in. And he was so upset with this, because he really loved her, he was in love with her. He was so upset by this that it says that he wanted to die, that she upset him to the point where he wanted to die. He was so upset already. With this. So he finally breaks down and tells her, which was a terrible, terrible thing to do. He breaks down and tells her that it's his hair. That if she shaves his hair off, because he's a Nazir, he's abstinent, and if she shaves his hair off his head, those huge locks of hair that he has, that will be the end of his strength. And that was the truth. So she does it. And this time, when she says, "The Philistines are upon you, Shimshon," so that the first three times he easily broke out and got ready to fight, they easily broke loose. The fourth time he couldn't. Hashem took his strength away from him, and he didn't even know that Hashem had taken his strength away from him. But Hashem, to punish him, it wasn't so much the hair itself, as if there's some magical power to growing long hair. Of course there isn't. It's because Hashem demanded certain things of him. Demanded loyalty to his vows, demanded loyalty to his oath and his promise to be a Nazir, and demanded loyalty to the Jewish people that should be above and beyond his sexual attraction to a woman and even falling in love with this evil woman, and foolishly trusting her, which had to bring punishment from Hashem. So because of that, Hashem took his strength away, and the Philistines grabbed him and captured him and tied him up and poked his eyes out. They poked his eyes out of his head, and they put him, they were torturing him and put him in a situation where he was under constant torture and under constant humiliation. They didn't want to kill him because they wanted to torture him. They wanted to stretch out his torture until he eventually, I guess eventually, would die from being tortured and humiliated for so long. But they killing him, they thought was too good. They wanted to torture him, and they wanted to really, really make him go through the worst pain and suffering imaginable. And so that's what they did. Now, the Philistines also were a people that didn't take anything seriously. Everything was a joke to them. And that's an evil, those are evil people. People for whom everything is a joke and everything is comedy. Like these self-hating Jewish comedians or these animal comedians on television. When everything is a joke and nothing is serious to somebody, that's evil. That's very evil. There are things in life that are very serious that are not a joke, and people should take seriously. And when someone makes a joke out of everything, that's one of the pure definitions of pure evil in Judaism. And the Philistines were a nation and a culture that did that. They were a nation and a culture that made everything was humorous, and everything was something to celebrate and have a party over. Even if people die, even if people, when people being tortured, you laugh at that. It leads to sadism, and it leads to the worst type of cruelty. And so they decided they're going to really enjoy putting him through pain and agony and humiliating him. So they decided they're going to bring him in front of a stadium with 3,000 of the Philistine leaders, so the most important Philistine, the heads of the military and the generals and the most important leaders and heads of Philistine society. The 3,000 most important people in Philistine society were invited to come to this stadium, and they were going to witness the humiliation and the torture of Shimshon, tie him to two giant pillars, and or put him between two giant pillars, not tie him, but put him between two giant pillars and just humiliate him. What they didn't realize was that his hair was starting to grow back during the time that they were torturing him. He was being tortured and kept under torturous conditions, but his hair was starting to grow back. And more importantly, he was praying to Hashem and begging Hashem and saying to Hashem, just give me this one time. He prays to Hashem, he makes a final prayer to Hashem. Give me this one time where I can finally avenge what they've done, avenge the Philistines for what they did to my eyes and what they've done in general. Give me this one last chance. In other words, he begged Hashem to let him die with the Philistines, and he said he would die. I will die with the Philistines. And so they put him in this big stadium between two pillars that are holding up this giant stadium with 3,000 of the most prominent and important Philistine leaders and generals and heads of the military, and all the brains of the Philistine society were there. And he's between the two pillars, and Hashem gives him his old strength back. And he uses his two hands to push the pillars, to pull the giant stone pillars and move the pillars and bring them down and bring down the entire stadium on all 3,000 people. In other words, he had his incredible miraculous strength back, and he brings down the stadium on all 3,000 of the Philistine leaders, killing all of them. And of course, he also was killed in the process, but his dream of at least getting final revenge against the Philistines was realized. As a result of that incident, where 3,000 of their most prominent leaders, of the brains of Philistine society, were killed, it was a devastating blow to the Philistine nation, if you can call it a nation. It was also a tribal people, but at least they did work together, unlike the Jews, when they wanted to. And so the Philistines, this terrible blow made it so that the Jews did have relief even after Shimshon's death. The Jews had a period of relief from Philistine oppression, thanks to Shimshon. During the 20 years when he was their judge, he became a judge, he was a shofet, he was a judge for them. They didn't even know that he was there. He was in reality their leader when he was waging this guerrilla war, and they didn't even know it. He was the one who was saving them. He was the one who was protecting them by what he was doing. He was the one that was giving them relief from the oppression and the murder and the pillaging and the rape and the horrible crimes that they were committing against the Jewish people before Shimshon. He was the one that gave them this relief and that was their security. He gave them the security that they had, and they didn't even realize it. But after his death, they did realize it. And after his death, they came and picked his body up and came and gave him a decent burial. They came to where the ruins were of the stadium that collapsed and gave him a decent burial and realized that he had been, in fact, a great Jewish leader who went unrecognized and who was even handed over by the Jews to the enemies of the Jews. And he was in fact, a great Jewish leader. That's the story of Shimshon. It's at least part of the story. I didn't go into all the detail, of course. You can always read it yourself in the book of Judges, Sefer HaShoftim, the story of Shimshon. Wow, what a magnificent book that Bible is. There was nothing was ever written so breathtaking, so magnificent as the true words of our Tanakh. Tanakh is the Jewish Bible. But that's just one of the stories. And I just want to briefly say, by the way, for those of you who think, one guy is going to take on a whole country with all these armies and people, that's not how can they have this incredible strength. When we took on the Soviet Union in the Jewish Defense League, and I'm not comparing us to Shimshon, but it's a story that did take place. We in the JDL took on the Soviet Union. There were times when we had, of course, we had hundreds of members who were active in the JDL, but only two or three of us were actually involved in the actual bombings that really liberated Soviet Jews, that really created a crisis in Soviet-American relations, that put the issue of Soviet Jewry and the plight of Soviet Jewry on page one throughout the entire Western world so that it couldn't be ignored anymore and so that the Soviets had to free the Jews and had to let them out. When we did this, sometimes there were only two or three of us doing this, two or three people, because you only needed two or three people to set off bombs and blow up Soviet diplomats' cars. We didn't kill anybody. We just blew up their cars. They had diplomatic cars that were parked. We'd blow up their cars and destroy their cars. We set fire to their property and did property damage. That's all we did. But it was enough to put the issue on page one and create a crisis in Soviet-American relations where the Soviets knew that if they wanted good, stable relations with the United States, which they desperately needed, and eventually even when the Soviet Union fell, the Russians desperately needed that they had to allow the Jews to go. And so there were times in history when just two or three people would wage a war against an empire and bring about incredibly miraculous results. When Hashem wants something like that to take place, it can take place. By the way, the two or three of us that did that set off dozens of bombs and made the issue page one dozens of times and made it an issue when it wasn't an issue before, made it a burning issue, a major issue, an unavoidable issue that could no longer be ignored. Just two or three people against an empire. That was also a great miracle. So, things like that do happen in biblical times, and sometimes even in modern times, we've seen things like that happen in the battle to save this incredible people, the Jewish people. Meantime, we in JTF are continuing our campaign to wake the Jews of Israel up. We have an advertising campaign, our Hebrew videos, to try to wake them up and to try to make the Jews aware of what their true destiny is. And when you help us and fight with us and join with us, that's what you're part of, a campaign to wake the Jews of Israel up, because that's the key to bringing redemption to the Jews and to the world. If we work together as a team, we can change Jewish history. For JTF, until next week, this is Chaim Ben Pesach. Shalom.